repeat all that. But you guys have a great pastor. I've stood in this room with him many times and talked, and it's interesting to see his heart, and that he's dedicated an entire month to this initiative. You know, he came and saw us speak, I believe, at Polk County High School, and it weighed heavy on his heart, and he has been a champion ever since. So you guys are blessed to have such a good pastor that understands this problem and trying to do something about it. There's a lot of churches in this community that know about the problem, but still deny that it's in their church. It's still denying that it's in their community. And we don't get to these numbers that we're going to look at here in a minute without it not being in every community. This disease, this epidemic does not discriminate. It doesn't care what color you are. Doesn't care how much money you make. Doesn't matter where you live. It attacks us all equally. Does that make sense? So this is our website, atsthebridge.org. You can reach us there, and you can get more information that I will probably reference later. I don't know if we have enough information here with us or not, but you can find stuff there. And then our face page, you can see some stuff going on there. And if you have any questions or concerns, please reach out to us. We'll help you any way we can. So with that being said, we don't even have 2018 numbers yet, but in 2017, we lost over 72,000 people to overdose. That's every 7 minutes if you drill the numbers down. And that number is highly suspicious, because there's no community on this planet that wants to say, come to Bradley, Tennessee, come to McMinn County, where we lost, name your number. Nobody wants to have that placard, right? So they're highly, highly underreported. That stadium right there is the Seahawks Stadium. It roughly houses 69,000 people. So every person you see in that stadium in 2017 and then some died. Just to give you a gravity of how big this issue is. And when we look at years past, it's not getting any better, it's getting worse. I'm scared to find out what the 2018 numbers are going to be. That memorial there is the Vietnam War Memorial. We fought that war over 10 years. We lost over 58,000 people on that wall, 58,272 people. And then the number continues to grow. But we fought that war over 10 years, and we determined as a country that losing that many people was unacceptable. We lost over 72,000 in 1 year alone to overdose. Not even fighting a war on our home soil. And we have shown a blind eye to this problem until recent. If you do the same snapshot over a 10-year period, you're looking at 500,000 to 600,000 people. It's unacceptable, guys, because it is 100% preventable. And we'll talk about that more in depth in a minute. So if we look at the drugs that are up there, on the left side, you'll see the prescription painkillers. Our hydrocodone, our Percocets, Oxycontin, those prescription painkillers. And as deadly as they are, as you go across the screen, you see stuff that's significantly stronger. And about the middle, you see heroin. And when I tell you that that's how strong heroin is, I'm lying to you, because I have no clue. I have literally no clue how strong heroin is. Heroin's now laced with fentanyl, the thing you see over there on the far left, or the far right. Yeah. That was what was supposed to be used for terminally ill people. But we have become so complacent that we prescribe it for a lot of different things that it was never intended to be prescribed for. And I'm not even talking about the illegal trade of stuff coming over from China through our southern border. We have physicians who are extremely undereducated. They're not pain management specialists, which is the reason why they're writing these over-the-counter prescription drug, the hydrocodone, the Percocets to begin with. But once I get down this tunnel far enough, that stuff's not going to get it for me anymore, and I'm going to have to go somewhere else. And that fentanyl is the last stop for a lot of people. Know this: when you buy heroin in this town, in this day and age, you're buying fentanyl. When you buy cocaine, oftentimes you're buying something laced with fentanyl. We've got a report in this community where someone was smoking marijuana and they died of an overdose of fentanyl. And we're not even talking about car fentanyl. Look at this scale. So on the far left is that fentanyl still, and on the far right is car fentanyl. Car fentanyl is what they use to put elephants down. It's not for human consumption at all. If it was on the first scale, I'd have to cut a hole in this roof to show you how much stronger carfentanil is from fentanyl. The amount that will kill you of carfentanil, you can't even see it. The amount of fentanyl that will kill you pure is like 3 grains. I was at TBI just the other day, and they talked about an officer in Memphis, and he was working a case, and it was fentanyl, and he died 4 times that day. The officer did, because he got contaminated with the product. He gets dismissed. He gets released from the hospital after his 3rd overdose, and he's good, right? He goes back out to the car. Guess what's in the car? The stuff from the case he was just working that he succumbed to. He succumbs to it again in his own car and has the wherewithal to inject himself with Narcan in the parking lot. This is an officer that hasn't returned to work in over a year. Anybody hear that phone go off? Anybody hear my phone? My phone's going to beep every 7 minutes. Every time someone's going to die in this country of an overdose. You know, this doesn't stop, guys. We don't get to these numbers by it having a break. No, it doesn't stop. It's 365, yeah? So when we get done with this presentation today, we'll find out how many people died while we're learning about the bad choices and the things that killed them. Does that make sense? Heavy subject today. Let me back up. So Galatians 5:20. I challenge you guys to write some notes down. Look at Galatians 5:20. In Galatians 5:20, it's in the New Testament. It's the only time that they reference this way. When they reference witchcraft, the Greek translation of that is pharmakeia. Pharmakeia is the root word for pharmacy. And they said that they would use these pharmaceuticals to induce a drug-type trance. Do you think that's not what's happening right now in this day and age when we're using these drugs? I believe this is a spiritual war, folks. And I believe it starts right there. I believe we've been woke up to the root cause of the issue right there. One of our biggest public health challenges of our time is the opioid addiction crisis ravaging our communities. The same guy who said that said this. Participation of faith communities in the nationwide fight against drug abuse is critical to preventing and treating opioid misuse. So this person believes that we got to rely on Jesus to fix this problem. Anybody know who said this? Comes from a very unlikely source. The current Surgeon General of the United States of America. He said that. Our federal government is recognizing that if we want to fix the opioid epidemic, we've got to start with Jesus. And the church is blind to the fact that we have to start with Jesus. To the fact that you've got a construction worker standing in front of you today talking about Jesus in a church when the church isn't talking about it, and that's their wheelhouse, not mine. I should be talking to you about how to move more dirt, how to blow up a bridge, how to lay asphalt. But instead, I'm talking about Jesus and addiction. What he's looking at right there in that picture is the wall. Every one of those white dots is a pill. Every one of those pills has a person's face engraved on it who died of an overdose. And it travels the country. And that's what the Surgeon General is looking at right there in that picture. I don't know how many names are on it. Too many, yeah? So here's a few articles. I'm not going to read them, but it's waking up to the understanding that faith, that Jesus is the solution. And guys, I didn't used to believe that. 5 years ago when I first started down this path, I agreed that Jesus was a answer, not the answer. I thought you could go a couple different ways. I thought there was other things that you could do. I don't believe that anymore. Pastor Russell Coffey is the one who beat me in the head with that. Then the Holy Spirit convicted my soul, I believe, and woke me up. And it's changed everything. Ephesians 6. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil. Do you believe this is a spiritual war? So here we go. We have marijuana, we have alcohol, we have vaping, we have cigarettes. Every single one of those things is absolutely a stepping stone to other things. Because you don't wake up perfectly healthy and squared away and go, you know what, I think I'm going to buy a vape today. You know, I think I'm going to buy a cigarette. You know, I think I'm going to go have a drink. You know, I think I'm going to smoke a bowl. I don't think that's how it starts. I think it starts with bad decisions, leading to more bad decisions, leading to bigger bad decisions. No person in addiction ever started going, you know what? I'm good today. I think I'm going to go get some heroin and shoot. It's not the way it started, is it? Absolutely not. And we'll talk about that in depth here in a minute. But know this. Those are stepping stones. And we have got to get off our butts and talk to these young people because they are vaping at record numbers. And those are absolutely stepping stones to other things. And when we are legalizing marijuana around this country, we are doing a major disservice to this country. Do you think the devil understands what this does to us? Do you think he's not the one telling the lies about what this is and how good it is for us? So when I'm in front of fourth graders and trying to tell them that marijuana is bad, that vaping is bad, and everyone in their family's doing it, and we're legalizing it around the country, I look like the biggest hypocrite they've ever met in their life. You want to know why I do what I do? Because I feel guilty. Because my generation has failed. We have failed to address this. And every single one of you in this room cannot leave this room today and say, you do not know. I'm taking it away from you right now. He is taking away from you right now. Because we're all in here for a reason. I don't know what that reason is for every one of you. I know what it is for me. I beg you, open your hearts and minds and hear his words and find out what your purpose is. Why are you hearing this today? Why are you sitting in this church right now today listening to this message? If you're just filling time, if you're just killing time, then you need to go ahead and leave. I believe you're here for a reason. We've got to do something about this, guys. We've got to do something about this. The only group that they allow me to talk to at Lee University is the theology kids. The theology class. And oftentimes, that's the class that's asking me to justify the bad choices, the bad decisions that they're doing. And marijuana is one of them. And they're wanting me to give them validation that it's okay. That's a true story. Is that not true, Reba? 1 Peter 1:13. Be holy, and therefore with minds that are alert and fully sober, set your hope on the grace to be brought to you when Jesus Christ returns. Guys, he talks an awful lot about heart and mind, does he not? Think about these things. I believe these scriptures tie to what we're talking about here. Did that just happen? So oftentimes I hear people say, marijuana is good because it's natural. Dude, God created it, man. Yeah, he sure did, didn't he? Well, let's talk about things being natural. That top left picture over there is poison ivy. I'm assuming it grows right across the street here. Y'all want to go roll around some poison ivy? Come on, it's going to be great fun. The next one, tobacco. We understand tobacco is not good for us, right? Natural product. Can we eat any mushroom we see? Next one over there is poison sumac. Bottom left is a strychnine tree. Poison, pure poison. In Asia where that grows, they call that the suicide tree. The next one's salt water. Can we just drink salt water? You got a Panama City Beach shirt on. You've been around some salt water. Can we just drink salt water? Absolutely not. You know what's really cool about this slide? When we're talking to little ones, when I get to the salt water, some of them get really torqued up about it, and they're like, no, you can't do that. And then we'll ask them why. And it's interesting to hear the little ones that know why you can't drink salt water. Who in here knows why you can't drink salt water? Don't tell me a fourth grader is smarter than y'all. Dehydrates you, yeah? You'll die of dehydration. Anyway, the next one is oleander. My granddad taught me about a war that was fought, the War of Northern Aggression. And Charleston, South Carolina was under Union occupation. And the Southern women got fed up with it, so they were trying to get rid of them. So they made them oleander tea, trying to poison them. Oleander is a beautiful plant, but it's poison. The last one up there is a snake root. Anybody remember a guy named Abraham Lincoln? Kind of a minor character in our history. Well, they believe his mother died from drinking milk from a cow that had eaten apparently an excessive amount of snake root. I don't know if it's true or not, but that's the story. The moral of this part of the story is, guys, every single one of those things is 100% natural. Just because it's natural doesn't mean it's good for you. If you're using that as your argument to tell me that smoking dope is good, then you've not done your homework and you're a very weak argument. Does that make sense, guys? All right. Bowman Hills, 8th grader, 6th grader, 7th grader, somewhere in there. When I say this and I tell her about the college student who brought this to my attention, which made me go fight it like this, she said, wait a minute, just because God created doesn't mean anything. We live in a sin world. We're in a broken world now. Things changed. How apropos is that for a young person to get it? And then the teenager trying to use it as an excuse to validate them smoking dope. Does that make sense, guys? All right. So what's the opposite of bondage? Freedom. Where do we get our freedom? Yeah, from right there, huh? So if this is a spiritual war, and it indeed it is, then what does the evil one want to take from us? He wants to take our freedom away. He wants to lock us in bondage. He wants to separate us from our source of power. And our source of power is the Holy Spirit, yeah? So if he can make us separate from our source of power, he's got us in bondage where he wants us. And the lies continue. Does that make sense? We'll dig into that more. So every single person in this room right now, every single one of you, me included, have a mask. We're all hiding behind a mask of some sort. There's something you've said, done, or thought that you don't want me to put on this screen and talk about in front of everyone, me included. We all hide behind masks. So a couple ways we can get into this bondage is maybe we're the privileged person. Maybe we have everything, but we have a damaged heart. It doesn't matter how you get the damaged heart. It matters that you have it. Or you could be a straight-up abused person and you have a damaged heart that way. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've talked to a parent who is very wealthy, very well-known, very, very stable, you would think. Well, I've given him everything and this and that and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but did you give him heart? Did you teach him who Jesus was? And they wonder why their child or their name, their person, is in this bondage. Does that make sense, guys? There's a third way, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. But hiding behind that mask are those things. Those things may not be true, but they believe they're true, and perception's reality. And the one that I hear the most is, it made me feel numb when I did this whatever. And it's because you don't have to think about the bad choices. You don't have to think about the bad outcomes. You don't have to think about any of this other stuff. You can just escape from reality for a moment, and you feel numb. Well, if I can give you a pill, or I can give you a substance, and it makes that pain go away, because that's what this is about, guys. It's about pain. And I'm not talking about physical pain. No, I'm talking about internal pain. So if I can give you something that makes that go away, what makes you think you're not going to want that? Am I separating you from your source of power? Am I making you feel shameful for doing this thing? Absolutely. Am I shutting you down, making you say, I can't talk about this to anyone because they won't understand? Because the person doesn't have this stuff. The person may know these things, but they don't believe them. Does this make sense, guys? Yeah. A lot of this is completely out of the person's control. Absolutely out of the person's control. When we talk to the addict or the suicidal, it's not about dying, it's about making it go away. Philippians. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. If we could ever take a step back and just think about those words for a moment when that anxiety hits us, do you think that where the Holy Spirit is, the devil can't be there, right? But he's trying to separate us from our source of power so he can then lie to us and separate us from those thoughts. Well, if we can just come back from that and demand this, what an opportunity we have to break away from this bondage, yeah? All right, so this is going to be fun. So I'm going to show you a picture. This is the problem. I want you to focus. You guys have to really focus on the screen right now. So that's the problem. Everybody see it? Everybody saw the problem? So what I'm getting at here is the problem If we don't identify the problem, if we turn away from what our problem is, we can't define what the problem is. And so we don't look at it. We don't want to address it because it's the problem. And so we go over here. And so then our perception determines that this problem oftentimes is much bigger than it really is. Does that make sense? How many of you guys have had a report to write or something you had to do and you didn't want to do it? And so you turned away from it. And you kept turning away from it. And you kept turning away from it. And then finally, you identified it, you addressed it, and when you got done, you're like, well, it really wasn't that bad. Well, let's talk about this problem. So watch the screen. So here's the problem. There was the problem, right? So is this the actual problem? So after a few more days of not addressing the problem, is it the same problem? After a few weeks, is it still the same problem? We're still turning away from it. A few more weeks, is it still the same problem we started with? A few months, is it the same problem? We're still not addressing it. What's our perception doing? That problem's getting bigger, ain't it? Are y'all seeing it? So year. So there was our actual, and there's where we ended. So by not addressing it, by not calling it out, by not singling it out and knowing who our enemy is and addressing it head on, the problem becomes bigger. Perception left unchecked becomes mythical and grows. Yeah? And that separation from the Holy Spirit becomes larger and larger. We become farther and farther apart. Does that make sense, guys? We have to have voluntary confrontation to the problem. We have to single it out and attack it. And then take the next one out and attack it. But if we continue to turn away from our problem, we're never going to win this. I say perception becomes larger. Reality may become larger too, because of our actions of not addressing this, we may actually have a bigger problem. It may not be a perception at all. Does that make sense, guys? Reba makes fun of me that I've got a squirrel in my head and he's just running around looking for a nut up there all the time. So there's a method to my madness. Sometimes it's unconventional though. So if you're not following me, please say something. David and Goliath. That was the problem. What would have happened if David would have said, I can't handle that problem? Who did he have to fight the problem? Who took care of the problem before David ever showed up on the field that day? Yeah. If we can single it out and we can demand in the name of Jesus that we fight this thing, that we confront this thing, that we take this thing over, that we cast it aside, that we get beyond this, do we not have an opportunity to beat the problem? But if we continue to cow down to the devil and the lies and bury it because nobody will ever understand, then there's no way we'll ever win the beat the problem. Does that make sense? And I know that's easier said than done. But is it? So we're safe, we're secure, we're in the midst of many people going the same direction as us. We're strong in the body of the church, yeah? Does that make sense? And I can't read that from here. Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves, and a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. But what happens when he can separate us? What happens if he can separate us from the pack? What happens if he can separate us from our source of power? If he can single us out, can he not? Because remember, singling out the problem is the issue, right? It's his issue too. If he singles us out, it's the same thing as if we single him out. That's a two-way street, guys. Does that make sense? So if he can make us feel hopeless, if he can make us feel shame, he can get us in bondage. And I got this. This came to me from a professor at Lee who teaches theology. And he said, I'm strong in the faith. I've been prescribed opiates. I'm good. I don't know how this happens. This is how this happens. You break your arm. You go to a doctor who doesn't know what he's doing. And he prescribes you opiates. And you take them. And they speak to you. And next thing you know, you're like, one turns into three. Turns into a refill, turns into, what have I done? I can't talk to my church about this. I can't talk to my spouse about this. I can't talk to anyone about this. Is that not how it happens? Absolutely. We are at the front lines of the war if this is spiritual war. Where does the devil get the sweetest nectar when he divides the church? And what makes us think that he's not going to attack us where we feel the most strong? If I was on the other side of the fence, that's exactly where I would be. I've seen it with these young people who are strong in the faith. They've had testimonies all over town. They've been doing great things. They've had loved ones in their family die of overdoses, which is why they got into this fight. And then they come to me 2 years after going to college going, some stuff has changed in my life. And then try to get me to validate the bad choices that they're making. The kid's forgot more about the Bible than I know. And he can sure talk the talk, but he is absolutely blind to what's going on. Same kid who's not getting a hold of me anymore. Same kid whose cousin died in Bradley County, high profile death, high profile family, absolutely knows better. When he was in high school, was leading the charge in high school to not go down this path, and then 2 years into high school, he's doing everything. Do you think the devil's trying to make him out to be a hypocrite? To take away any good that he's ever done? Any person he's ever helped is going to look at him now and go, psh. Do you think that's how it happens? I do. So this is a true story. That's a little buffalo. Let's call him Lucky. So Lucky is 7 days old at most. 7 days old at most. So watch Lucky. Lucky, right after being born, the herd moves. They migrate. And they go to ford a river, a raging river at Yellowstone. He gets swept away from his mother. His mother tries to get him, but she can't. He's downstream. So the herd continues on. So you think that's the end of Lucky, right? Well, Lucky, downstream somewhere, washes up on an island in the middle of the river and stays the night on this island in the middle of the river. And then the next morning he wakes up and there's a wolf on the island with him. And the wolf begins to attack Lucky. And it's not looking good for Lucky at all. And then by chance, the herd comes around this bend, and there's Lucky on the island, and then his mother sees, and she runs over to the island, and the two of them fight off this wolf. Do we want to rely on luck? Or do we have something more secure, more stable, the Holy Spirit? Jesus. Because evil doesn't give up. Evil doesn't stop. And if we're relying on luck, that's not going to end well. That's going to end in another one of these bells going off. Does that make sense, guys? That's an actual true story. And it was pretty interesting. Lucky, he buffs up on the wolf and actually attacks the wolf. It's pretty neat. You can watch it on the internet. So that rock, do you think that rock broke overnight? Do you think that rock just on the next day said, oop, I'm going to break, boom? Or do you think something exposed a fault in that rock? And do you think that fault in the rock got continually jeopardized and beat on and beat on and beat on to the point that it broke the rock? Well, what do you think we are? What do you think happens when the devil finds a fault in us? When he can find the weak place in our armor, what makes you think he's going to expose it and walk away from it? He's going to expose it and he's going to get a hammer and chisel and continue to beat on it until he breaks us. He never gives up. And he knows the Bible better than we know the Bible. And he is going to manipulate everything. Does that make sense, guys? It doesn't matter how we got the broken heart. It doesn't matter where the end result is the same. Does that make sense, guys? Be careful of your hearts. Be careful or your hearts will be weighted down with carousing, drunkenness, and anxieties of life, and that day will close on you suddenly like a trap. I was good, dude. I'm solid. I'm just drinking a beer. I'm just smoking a joint. I'm just doing a pill. I'm not going to shoot. I only shoot every once in a while. Yeah. You see how it happens, guys? So let's play a game. Who in here is hungry? Reba's hungry. So I want you to look at these foods. I want you to see the food that gets you. I want you to visualize that food. I want you to see it in your hand. I want you to smell it. I want you to taste it. I want you to think about what that food gives you. Seriously, I want you to visualize it. I want you to totally try to taste it. Now, how many of you guys in here want that food right now? I know I'm in a Baptist church, but surely somebody in here will tell me, yeah. You all want the food. And I want you to know that it's not the food at all that you want. It's the dopamine that the food gives you when you eat it. And dopamine is such a strong drug that the food's not in the room right now, and every single one of you craves the food that you want. That's how strong that power is over us. There's two ways we get dopamine. The largest release of dopamine comes from food and sex. So the maximum amount of dopamine our body's ever experienced naturally in its life is, let's say, the size of a strawberry. And the size of a strawberry, that much dopamine, is what's making you crave a food that's not in this room right now. So what happens if I can make that food make a basket full of dopamine? Which one do you want now? You totally want the basket. Well, guess what? That's what the drug does. The drug tricks the mind into releasing more dopamine than you've ever had in your life. When your body feels that, it goes, yes, that was awesome. Or maybe it's that thing that we're hiding behind, that pain inside that we don't want to address. And when we take that drug, it makes that go away. And we feel like Superman. We've never felt this way before. And we're like, yeah, that was different. That was good. Do you think the mind makes a stamp of that? Absolutely makes a stamp of that. Makes a memory of that. And the mind, out of your control, starts going, I want that. That was the stuff. That was the stuff right there. Does that make sense, guys? 1 Corinthians 10:13. I just love this one. Nothing is overtaking us that he's not giving us a way out. He knows it before it ever happened. Are we going to rely on him, or are we going to rely on ourselves? Are we going to look to the world for our fix? Or are we going to look to the Spirit? Because if we use the world for our fix, the world's what got us in the problem to begin with. So let's look at your brain as a wiring harness. Every wire in the harness has a certain role, certain function it's supposed to perform. So if we take the wire out of our brain, that's how we experience, name your drug, alcohol. If that wire's not damaged, that means I can drink the alcohol. I'm good either way. I can drink, take it or leave it. I'm good. Let's say that wire's damaged. But you don't know the wire's damaged until you take the thing. So let's say that my wire for alcohol is damaged. That's when I drink the alcohol, I get that euphoric feeling, that dopamine dump, and I go, yeah. But I didn't know it was damaged until I tried it. Know this. You can have a perfectly good wiring system. But if you continue to test the system, it's going to fail. Does that make sense? I'm way oversimplifying some very complex things that go on in the body. Do y'all get that? And we're not even talking about mixing things. Does that make sense? Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve that God's will, what God's will is. Do you see how he's always talking? He's talking about this an awful lot. An awful lot. And that is exactly what's under attack when we get into this world of addiction. That's how he takes us over. That's how he breaks the rock. Does that make sense? His war plan is very simple to figure out. So there we go. Pain plus drug of choice equals relief. That's the recipe for addiction right there. I've got whatever this pain is, and I'm not talking about a broken arm, I'm talking about pain. I've got this pain, I take this thing, it makes that pain go away, the mind goes, that worked, the body goes, yeah, that was amazing, what happens the next time I have pain? What do you think I'm going to do? I'm going to go back to that drug of choice. And that recipe right there, that formula works until it doesn't. Because at some point, I'm going to get shorter term relief, which is going to end up in negative consequences, which is going to end up in more pain. I couldn't deal with this much pain a second ago, but now I've got this much pain. What makes me think I can break that now? And this is what I call the tornado, because this is dependence leading to addiction. Does that make sense, guys? We have to change what our drug of choice is. We have to quit going to the world for this fix and go to the Spirit. We've got to get faith in here somewhere. Does that make sense? Because at its core, this is not about flesh and blood. This is about spiritual. We may not be able to see this thing. That doesn't mean it's not happening. Does that make sense? Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Does that make sense, guys? Am I making any sense here? Good. So let's talk about MATs. Medically assisted treatment. And you've got buprenorphine, Suboxone, methadone. Guys, those are of the world. And we've admitted that we're fighting a spiritual war. And if we go to the world to fix our problem, we're missing the root cause of the issue. The root cause of the issue is a separation from God. Does that make sense? So if we continue to go down this path, what have we done? We've replaced an illegal narcotic with a legal one. And so often these days, we find these clinics that are more than willing to do that for us. And it's about money. I have a friend who's not very far from here right now who never took an illicit drug in his life. He's in some of the alphabet groups for our country. He's done nasty things in foreign places for us. And he's seen and done things that he's not proud of. And he carries that baggage around with him every day. And I didn't realize it was getting to him. And he has some other physical maladies now. And so he goes to a doctor and they prescribe him, I think it was hydrocodones. And in less than one bottle of hydrocodones, he was addicted. And he knows where I'm at on drugs. He knows where I'm at. He's got an employee that I've been trying to help for years. So one night he calls me and he's crying. And let me back up. This is one of the most successful businessmen I know. And he's where I go to get spiritual advice. Solid in the faith. And he's crying, and I'm thinking his employees died because he's a wreck. And I'm like, is Jeremiah gone? What? You know, talk to me. He's like, it's me. I've got a problem. How big of a thing was that for him to take that mask off and expose to me and ask me for help? So I'm like, I'll be at your place in the morning. And I'm like, and he keeps talking about the physical problems that he has. And I'm like, yeah. So I'm like, I'm going to have to talk to this guy about his problem. And it's not his physical problem. It's his spiritual problem. About a guy who advises me. I'm like, this is going to be an interesting conversation. So I get there, and he's strong enough in the faith that when I get there that morning, he understands that he's under attack. This is spiritual war. So anyway, from his hydrocodone addiction, he then went to Suboxone because there was the guy that I'm trying to help get on Suboxone. He says, well, take Suboxone. That's what they use to get you off this stuff. So he goes over there, he gets that, and then he's like, well, this is worse than the other stuff. This is stronger than the other thing I was on. So then he goes to the doctor to try to get off of it, and this doctor's not far from this place right here, and he's on 4 milligrams of Suboxone. And he says to him, I want a plan to get off of this. This is not what I want to do. I don't want to. I'm addicted to this. I need off of this. And the doctor says to him, I've never had anybody ask me this before. And then he says, let's go up to 5 milligrams, and then we'll start tapering you off. Did y'all just hear what I said? He was taking 4. And the doctor said, let's go to 5 and then we'll taper. Because the doctor saw that the hook in the fish's mouth is a little weak, so he's got to set it even harder. Let's go to 5. And this guy, yesterday, is 7 months clean. Yesterday, 7 months clean. And he said, Scott, this is the worst battle I've ever fought in my life. And I've been in some pretty bad places doing some pretty nasty things. And this is evil personified. So when we talk about these things, I'm not saying that they can't be used for good. I'm saying that 99.999% of the time, they are not. We got to be very, very careful because, again, we're looking at worldly things to solve a spiritual issue. 2 Timothy 3:7, always learning but never coming to an understanding of the truth. The way I interpret that from Pastor Coffey is looking to the world to solve a faith issue. Guys, I'm not saying that we can't have clear expectations. I'm not saying that we can't set boundaries for people that are in addiction. But we have to be very, very careful in how we go forward with this. There are places, there are faith that Reba and I have found all around this community that are virtually free for help. We were just at one last week or so. What's the name of it? I always forget it. True Purpose. They're in Madisonville, they're in Maryville, they're in Sevierville, they're in Indiana, and I believe they're in Vonore. And with any luck, in the next year or two, hopefully there'll be one in Bradley. Virtually free. Virtually free. Men or women. Or women that are pregnant. Or women that have kids. There's a place in Teleco Plains called the House That Mercy Built. Significantly cheaper. What was it? It was $250 a month, yeah. There's a place in Birmingham, Alabama called The Foundry. Hang on to your pants here. It's $500 for the year. For the year, men or women. There's Life Changers in Sevierville. It's free. Men or women. Guys, there are a lot of places out there. You can pay as much as you want or literally as little as you want. There are places out there. I believe, did you bring some information with us today? Reba's got a resource listing, and we're coming up with more and more all the time. Please reach out to us if there's something we can do to help you to get that information to somebody else. But please don't use that I don't have enough money to do this thing. Does that make sense? Okay. So let's look at that. The left brain over there is a normal brain, normal activity. That's the way it's supposed to look. The middle brain is somebody who's gone to detox for maybe 10 days. Is he thinking clearly? Is his brain functioning like it's supposed to? Absolutely not. Not even close. And we wonder why the addict goes to detox and then stumbles, and we blame the addict. Look at his brain. His brain's not even close to being where it's supposed to be. Now let's go to the far right side, and that's a person who's gone to a 3-month rehab. Is his brain thinking clearly? Absolutely not. And we wonder why they fail. And we want to blame the addict. He doesn't want it. He's not trying. He knows better than this. Is it his fault? I don't believe it is. And we're not even addressing the root cause of the issue. The root cause of the issue is faith. This is just the worldly side of them. Does that make sense, guys? We just found out in the last couple months that the new meth that's out, because see, what happened is the war on drugs has been focused on opiates for quite a while now. And so the drug cartels have said, you know what? We need to go a different direction. Let's quit with the opiates. Let's go back over to meth. So they're making meth and importing it in mass quantities. And they're seeing that this meth of today is so much stronger than we've ever seen before, and that the effect on the brain is at least 2+ years before the brain comes back to reality again. Because in this model here, they're saying a year. A year of sobriety gets the brain back to what it should be, more normal functioning. But with the new drugs of today and the new combinations of things, who knows what permanent damage is being done? Does that make sense? It's a different world today. And it's going to be a different world tomorrow. And it's going to be a much different world next month. Because this thing doesn't ever stop. It keeps growing. I was in front of 4th and 5th graders yesterday. And it was who was the second class? 4th or 5th? 4th. So it was a 4th grader. A 4th grader comes up to me and is talking to me about Flocka. Does anybody in this room even know what Flocka is? It's a very, very bad drug. That's the drug that makes people turn into zombies and they eat each other. Literally. And here's a 4th grader asking me about Flocka and the next zombie apocalypse, because he knows exactly what Flocka does. A 4th grader, guys. Let me go off path here for just a second. If we think that we're not having a conversation with our loved ones, our young ones, because we're scared we're going to take their innocence away, that's the devil talking to you. Because we have to have that conversation, because if you don't have it, somebody else is going to have it, and it's going to be the wrong conversation. We have to educate these guys. I hate it with every ounce of my being, standing in front of 4th graders telling them about the world. But guys, I would love to show you the cards that we get back from these guys and the validation that we get from them, because we're not educating them, they're educating us. We got to have a conversation, guys. This is a different world. We can turn the faucet off, but we got to go back here. I'm not saying that the ones up here, we leave them alone, but we can turn it off back here. Does that make sense? So this is it. The heart's got to submit. The mind's got to resist, and the body's got to heal. And those are the scriptures that we looked at when we went through this through this presentation. That's the culmination, I believe, of fixing the problem. The person may have been, it's been a year ago maybe, we went to a funeral, a pretty high up in the church. His son of 41 years died of an overdose. Do you think that young man grew up in the church? Absolutely. Do you think he knew Jesus? Do you think he heard about Jesus? Absolutely. Was he public enemy number one to the devil? Absolutely. Guys, they may know these things, but they don't believe them. That's that lie that you can't give this to Jesus. You've gone too far this time. You've never gone too far, have you? Doesn't he use broken people continually? Continually? Doesn't he use broken people continually? You've never gone too far. That's the devil talking. The best thing is not get started, but the next thing is don't give up and know where you can go. Because all he asks us to do is call my name. I was helping a young guy, and I told him to envision. I told him that when he was on methadone for 5+ years, and he was on whatever well before that. Good kid. Just because you're an act doesn't mean you're a bad person. Good kid. And so he was on his way, his road to recovery, and I said, "How's it going?" And he goes, "It's good. Sometimes it gets a little dark. Sometimes I can feel it, you know." I'm like, "Well, I want you audibly, as loud as you can, to profess, to call on God to take this from you and cast him on this problem, right? And turn from it." And I go, when you do that, I want you to envision angels with swords beating down demons, because that's what's happening. It's spiritual war. You can't see it. Doesn't mean it's not happening. And then I asked him, "Are you doing that?" And he's like, "Yeah, and when I do it, it feels different. It goes away." Not to say that doesn't come back, but it goes away at that moment. Somebody else told him to take the Bible and lay it on his heart and pray with the Bible on his heart, so it's a physical barrier, a physical shield. Remember Ephesians? The armor of God. I believe this kid's still doing well. He works for somebody else now. I've lost contact with him. I don't get to see him nearly as much as I used to. But I hear reports here and there. And I believe he is the leader in his family of turning this bus around. Does that make sense? Guys, that's really what I had today. Nobody's talking about, in my opinion, not enough people are talking about the correlation between faith and addiction. And if we want to beat it, we have to turn to God, because it's a spiritual war. Does that make sense? Your pastor gets it. Boy, does he ever get it. We stood right there, and both of us had hair standing up on our arms, and we were just freaked out about what we were saying. It's a pretty magical day. 8 people, guys. 8 people. That's 8 too many. That's 8 people who had families. If our DA was here, Stephen Crump, he would say, "Not one more." And he would challenge you to text somebody, "Not one more." This hashtag stuff, whatever, I don't do any of it. Reba knows more about social media than I will ever know. But somehow you do some text thing with this hashtag, "Not one more." And what he's hoping is that it then gets somebody else to call you back and go, "What are you talking about? Are you drinking again?" And then you can explain to him what "not one more" means. Because he still does talk about addiction, but it changed for him about a year ago when he found out that his cousin died of an overdose. And it hit home. What I used to say at the beginning of this presentation is, if you don't think this situation affects you, it's because you haven't looked. It affects every single one of us in this room right now. And if you don't know where that effect is, because you haven't peeled back the layer of the onion far enough, or else you're in denial. The other thing I would say is, if you don't believe this is a spiritual war, you're in denial. But he used to be on one side of the fence until it hit home and he had to do a eulogy, and then now it's personal. Does that make sense? Well, guys, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Is there any, I don't know how much time we have. Does anyone have any questions? I can try to answer them. If I can't get them, Reba will get them. We've got information, I think, that she's got there, and we'll put some stuff out there. You can get a hold of us through the website or the phone number and all that. We're here to help you. We've got resources. I think that's one of the best things we can do. If you got a young person in a school and you want to talk to a school, we'll go anywhere. But what can we do for you? Anybody have any questions for me? Yes. What do I do now?